With the 13th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you know that the NFL draft is fast approaching because the great Greg Cosell is with us in studio for the entire episode of this week's Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Greg?
Where is he?
He's here in the flesh.
Wow.
I know.
I don't know. With that introduction, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed.
A little pressure. So let's get right into it. Of course, Fran, as always, alongside
C-Mac.
Me here.
Thank you.
In the Xfinity studio as we get things rolling. So a lot to get into. But Greg, what is this time of the year like for you right now, which is a couple weeks out from the start of the NFL draft? Thursday, April 28th is going to be fast around the corner. They'll be here before we know it. As you do your film study, your prep for Eagles Draft Central, you'll be co-hosting alongside me the entire weekend. What is this time of the year like for you?
Well, this year in particular is a little more intense. Normally, I'm just grinding through as much college tape as I can in preparation for the draft. This year, if I could self-promote a little, we're doing
go for it.
Two NFL matchup draft special shows on ESPN, so we're pretty excited about that. So it's really interesting because we're doing what really everybody should be doing, which is to transition players from the college environment to the NFL environment. And that is really what this is all about. When you look at players, and Fran and I have had this conversation numerous times, that's really what you're doing. You're not just looking at players in a vacuum in college and deciding whether they're good or not so good or however you choose to evaluate them, but it's all about transitioning players from the college environment, which is a different game, to the NFL environment. And that's the real challenge.
And that's what, honestly, when we were getting ready to film our film room segment, we'll air Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from now up until the draft. And that's going to be the big focus of that series, is going to be looking at each position and what traits are translatable from college to the NFL, which ones allow players to thrive at each position.
And it's funny because when you talk to coaches and scouts are different animals. When you talk to NFL coaches, they think in terms of scheme adaptability, how a player can be used in their scheme. Very often scouts think in terms of measurables, and they just look at the player, I don't want to say in a vacuum, because obviously all scouts are working with their organization to find out what kinds of players the organization wants, but they see it more in terms of, hey, he's got such and such vertical jump, that means he's a really explosive athlete. And that's fine, but then coaches always think in terms of, great, but where can I play him in my scheme? You know, if you're talking about a safety, and we'll get to all this, mm-hmm. You know, is a safety a guy who can only play in a certain place in your defense? Can he only be used in a certain personnel package? The mere fact that he might have a lot of tackles in college doesn't necessarily factor into the equation.
But maybe how they tackle, the fact that you
Correct.
See that part of it on tape. Now, how difficult is it trying to find these traits or define these traits, knowing that a lot of college offenses and defenses aren't going to be the same at the next level?
And that's a huge difference and a huge challenge. And it's very noticeable at many positions, more visible at others, let's say. Running back is a great example, C-Mac, of where it's really different. In college, there's a lot of spread. There's a lot of offenses where you could have two wide receivers on each side split so far wide that you might have five people in the box. And when you're a running back running against that, it's a whole different situation than in the NFL, where you might line up. Even if it's three wide in the NFL, everything is still more condensed. We've talked about this a lot, the hash marks. The hash marks totally change the symmetry and geometry of the games. Because in college, with the hash marks spread so wide, the games are basically played on the perimeter. In the NFL, with the hash marks closer, the game is still essentially played in the middle of the field, and that really impacts running backs, for instance. There's certain traits you need to be a good NFL runner that you don't necessarily need to be a really good college runner in terms of gaining yards.
Certainly. Let's go right into the running backs and talk about Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
Okay. Most people would say he's one of the truly elite prospects in this year's draft class, and there's been some debate whether the Eagles should entertain the notion of taking him with the number 8 overall selection. What are your thoughts on Elliott as an NFL prospect?
He's a good prospect. I think he has the traits that you look for. Now, I think that he's very quick. He has very good short area burst. That's a special trait that he does have. I think he's strong. I wouldn't call him naturally powerful. I don't see him as a purely powerful runner, but he's a strong runner. He is willing to hit it up inside. So I think Elliott is a really good prospect. If you draft Elliott in the top 10 in an NFL draft, you are saying that he's your feature back and your offense will essentially work with Elliott as a foundation piece. You don't draft a running back in the top 10 in a draft to be a situational player. You draft him to be a foundation piece of your offense.
When I watched Elliott, I couldn't help but think about Todd Gurley. And obviously, he was the first back drafted in the first round in a couple of years and had so much success this past year with the Rams. How do you compare those two players? Because I feel like Gurley, a little bit more physically gifted in terms of his explosiveness downhill, just his natural ability, whereas I feel Elliott is probably a more natural runner, more instinctive runner. I don't know if that's how you saw it. How do you compare those two players?
I think overall, to me, Gurley was a better overall runner.
Yeah.
I think he's more naturally powerful.
Yep.
I think he's just as quick. You know, Gurley, I guess he's not a bigger back because Elliott's about 225, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I think Gurley runs bigger than Elliott.
I would agree with that.
And so I think Gurley was a better prospect. Elliott is still a really good prospect. You know, the thing that I think also helps Elliott when you watch film of him, he's a good blocker, which I think is really important when you transition. Particularly, look, if you're talking Eagles and you're assuming that Doug Peterson will run a similar offense to Andy Reid, which obviously he's been in that system for a long time, so you'd assume that's what he's running. I think that the pass game is really essential, and I think for Elliott, you want him to be a three-down back, certainly if you're drafting him at 8. If he's there at 8 and you're the Eagles and you take Elliott, he's a three-down back. That's the plan. And I think the blocking becomes very, very important. But I think as a pure runner, to me, Todd Gurley was a better pure runner in most areas than Elliott.
Who are some other possible fits at running back, looking at the Eagles, and if you're assuming that Doug Peterson is going to go with similar offense that he ran in Kansas City and that, you know, he learned from Andy Reid. Who are some other backs that are not going to be ones you would take in the first round, but if you're looking at third round area?
You know, it's funny you say that, and be interested to hear what Fran thinks, because let's put aside sort of the I back types. You know, I love Jonathan Williams out of Arkansas, and I know Fran does too. I'm not sure that theoretically he would fit the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're talking C-Mac later in the draft, if you look at a Jamaal Charles, okay, Jamaal Charles was, what, a third-round pick?
I think he was a second-round pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the big question with Jamaal Charles when he came out was, of course, his size, because he's not a big guy in terms of weight, nor is he built big. You know, he's not one of those strong-looking guys.
Yeah.
And yet he, in his own way, in that offense, became a feature back. He may not be a feature back the way you think of the Adrian Petersons of the world or the bigger backs.
Yeah.
Or even Ezekiel Elliott, who's 225 pounds. But if you think along those lines and you start to think about, okay, if you don't want to draft a back at 8, but you do want to get a back in this draft, to me you start thinking of guys like Tyler Irvin.
Mm.
You know, third, fourth round player
who's
about 190, probably not built a whole lot differently than Jamaal Charles. And he was a feature back in college, and he ran out of the I formation, offset I, you know, weak I, strong I. Is he similar to Jamaal Charles? Could he be similar to Jamaal Charles in an offense like this?
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting point. How about Kenneth Dixon is a player that we've talked about a lot.
Yeah. Fran loves him.
I had to squeeze him in.
No, he's another guy who's a stronger runner than Tyler Irvin. He weighs 20 pounds more, and he's a very, very good receiver. So I think a guy like Kenneth Dixon, and again, you can get into debates where guys will or won't be drafted. We have no idea. It's easy to sit here and say, well, he'll be there in the second round. The Eagles don't even have a second round pick. Mm-hmm. He may be there in the third. We don't know that.
Yeah.
You know, but Kenneth Dixon, I think stylistically, you would argue does what Doug Peterson would want. He's a good runner, and he can run inside, and he's a really good receiver who you could probably line up all over the formation as well.
How do you feel ultimately about, and this is one of the big topics, taking Ezekiel Elliott out of it, but
right.
taking a running back in the top 10? And it's a debate that's been had over the last couple of weeks in regards to the Eagles and whether or not Ezekiel Elliott is worth a top 10 pick. Is the running back position worth a top 10 pick, you know, in quote-unquote today's NFL?
Well, then I think you get to what kind of offense you're going to run.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to draft a running back that high, then the run game needs to be the foundation of your offense. Now, some might disagree with that. Look, Jamal Charles, you could argue, in Kansas City, there were times the run game was the foundation, there were times it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's a multidimensional offense, which theoretically the West Coast principle, that's what it is. There's many elements to the playbook. But to me, the kind of runner Elliott is, he's 225 pounds, he's an inside-type runner, he's got some power, he's got a lot of short area burst, I think that's the strength of his game. I think if you draft Ezekiel Elliott, you don't want to have games where Ezekiel Elliott carries the ball 11 times. I think you're drafting Ezekiel Elliott to be your foundation piece in your offense. And then you get into the whole thing about draft boards.
Yeah.
Because if Elliott, if you're drafting eight and you view Elliott as one of those guys in this draft, because I can tell you right now, every team really only has about 10 or 12 guys that they really view as that level player.
Right.
They don't have 30 guys. No team has 30 guys at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say Elliott's in that mix and you get to eight and he's sitting there. Then you get into your draft board. Okay, do we draft Elliott because he's the next guy on our board and we think he's one of those guys? That's great, but then you have to use him that way. He doesn't become a piece. He becomes a foundation.
Makes perfect sense. One area where I think Elliott would help would be, you mentioned the pass blocking, that would help the offensive line.
Yes.
And that's obviously a big position that Eagles fans are keeping an eye on. Now, they've addressed it this offseason by signing Lane Johnson to a long-term contract, figuring at some point he'll replace Jason Peters and move over to left tackle. They signed Brandon Brooks to take over the right guard position.
Good signing.
What do you think of those tackles after? We assume Laremy Tomlinson is going to be off the board.
Right, right.
So we're getting into Ronnie Stanley. We're getting into Taylor Decker, Jack Conklin, the second tier of tackles after Tunsil. What are your thoughts on those guys?
The problem for the Eagles, obviously, is they don't have a second-round pick. And I think that some of these guys are going to be gone. I think that you're starting to deal with Taylor Decker, who I think is a good left-tackle prospect. He's a big kid. He's a physical kid. I think you have Jason Spriggs from Indiana, who to me is a more athletic player than Decker. To me, I see Jason Spriggs. He reminds me somewhat of Nate Solder when he came out of Colorado, who was drafted 17th by New England in the first round. Now, I don't think Spriggs will likely go that high, but I think his skill set is similar. Yeah. They both came to college as tight ends and moved to tackle, and I think they're athletic players. They're not necessarily strong players. I think Spriggs is not as strong as Decker, not as physical a player as Decker, but I think he can develop into a very nice pass-protecting left tackle over time. Conklin is a player I struggle with as a left tackle. I like the player a lot. He's the classic case to me of the balance between competitive toughness, tenacity on one hand and physical athletic traits on the other, which are, to me, average to below average for a left tackle. So it's where do you stand on that spectrum?
Do you still approach it as left tackle and right tackle? Because to me, I
think
feel
the
like the way
does.
They
I think
move
the
rushers
does,
around.
But I don't know if that's a good thing. I think if you talk to a lot of coaches, they will tell you that they always help one side or the other in pass protection and that it doesn't matter which side you help. So I think when all's said and done, that distinction between left and right isn't as extreme as it used to be, but I still think a lot of people in the league still view it that way, and they still look at the left tackle position as the premium position and the right tackle position not so much.
Staying in the offensive line, you talked about how the Eagles don't have a second-round pick. You know, you talk about the depth of this interior offensive line group. Is there one player, and all these names throw out there, you know, could Cody Whitehair fall, you know, Joe Dahl, Josh Garnett, you know, Max Turk, Jack Allen, a lot of these interior offensive linemen. Is there one that stands out to you above the rest? Christian Westerman from Arizona State.
Right.
Anybody in that group that stands out to you that could be available in round three?
Well, Westerman to me is a very intriguing player. He's the Arizona State guard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a little lighter, but he's really athletic. So now it comes down, again, another part of the draft is it becomes team specific. Okay, if you're okay with a 300-pound guard who's really athletic, then I think Westerman really fits that profile extremely well. Now, he's a totally different player than Joshua Garnett from Stanford, who's a big guy, not unathletic, but certainly not the move for Christian Westerman. Westerman is one of those really athletic offensive guards. Now, people could also look back, and this is what teams do. They could look back at Jonathan Cooper coming out of North Carolina a few years ago. We all raved about his athleticism. Now, I don't know the kid. It didn't work out in Arizona at all, and he's gone from Arizona.
He's in New England, yeah.
And we all thought at the time, and I think you probably agreed, Fran, we all thought at the time that this kid Cooper was going to be a really potentially special player because you just didn't see athletes like that at guard. Now, I don't know Christian Westerman. He's more along those lines in terms of his physical traits. So I think if you're drafting him, you have to understand what kind of player he is. He's not a mauler. He's not a grinder. Not that he doesn't play hard and competitively, but he's 300 pounds. You know, he's not Joshua Garnett. They're different players.
Okay, I'll spend some time talking about your favorite position to scout, quarterback. The Eagles, we know what the Eagles have done this offseason. Re-signed Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
Signed Chase Daniel. But there have been all these reports that the Eagles are working out each of the top quarterbacks privately. Doug Peterson and Howie Roseman have not been shy about saying that they want to take a quarterback in this draft. Whether or not it's at number eight, that's one of the big debates, big questions going on now.
If someone is there at eight.
I guess that's – how do you think – I shouldn't ask you this because I know you're going to say you don't really know where guys are going to be falling, but how do you stack this year's group, especially at the top, looking at Jared Goff, looking at Carson Wentz, say, looking at last year, compared to last year with Jameis and Marcus Mariota?
Well, I'll just say this. I think that both Wentz and Goff will be gone by eight. Now, if I had to compare this year's group, I think Wentz is more talented than either Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota, just in terms of traits.
Okay.
I think Carson Wentz is a high-level traits prospect. Goff, I've wavered on. I've gone back and forth on Goff. The more I've watched him, and that's the thing, you end up, and Fran does this as well, you watch a guy, then you do other things for 2 weeks, watch a lot of other players, then you come back and watch a guy, then you do other players, then you come back and watch the guy again. And the more I've watched Goff, I like Jared Goff. I'm not sure I would view him as a top two or three pick in a draft. Now, that's in an ideal world. Every draft, we know how quarterbacks are viewed. I know my good buddy Chris Collinsworth thinks when all said and done, trades will be made and Wentz and Goff are going to go one and two because that's the nature of the quarterback position.
Interesting. Okay.
So whether, you know, that could very well happen just because it's, as I said, the nature of the position. But I don't think the more I've studied Jared Goff and the more I've talked to people who are familiar with that air raid offense and what he's asked to do, the more I feel like Jared Goff is not quite at that level of prospect.
It's interesting, Greg, and we've got a lot to get to, so this will be the last thing I'll ask you about in this segment. Look at the front seven, because a lot of the players that people are talking about going in the top 10, DeForest Buckner, Miles Jack, potentially Jalen Smith if he's healthy. How do you feel about those players fitting in with this Eagles team? Because I think there's lots of really interesting discussions when it comes to DeForest Buckner, Miles Jack, and what his value is, you know, in a worldview sense.
Sure.
You know, how do you feel about those two guys? And we'll start with Miles Jack.
Yeah,
I will say
this because you did mention his name. At this point, and I still have 3 weeks as we sit here before the draft, so I'll be doing more film study.
Of course.
But up to this moment in time, I think to me the best prospect I've seen on tape is Jalen Smith. Now, obviously, he's not going to be drafted in the top five because of the injury. But if you're just looking at film, I think, to me, he's the best prospect I've seen on film. Now, let's jump to
Just an absolute shame because of the injury.
The guy
absolute
is a terrific prospect. I had one D coordinator in the league tell me he's the best linebacker prospect he's seen in his career.
Wow.
So he's a big-time prospect. Miles Jack. It's been very in vogue to say, C-Mac, and Fran and I, again, have talked about this, that, oh, he fits today's NFL because he can do so many things. And that's an inarguable point. He's really athletic, and yes, he can do a lot of things. But you also, when you line up in your base defense, he has to play somewhere. Okay? The Eagles are starting, as we speak today, OTAs. Okay?
Yes.
So when they do, whether it's classroom work or whenever they get out on the field, and Jim Schwartz puts together his base defense, guys are going to be somewhere. Okay? Who, you know, Nigel Bradham is not going to play outside linebacker today, middle linebacker tomorrow, and safety the next day. He's going to line up in one spot because he has to practice that. Because you have to play a base defense in the NFL. So Miles Jack, whoever drafts him, they have to have a sense of where he's going to play in your base defense. Now, that could be outside linebacker. It could be safety. Is he Cam Chancellor? Is he, I'm trying to think of an outside line, you know, a run and chase kind of outside linebacker.
Is he Danny Trevathan?
Is he one of those guys?
Yeah, sure.
You know, maybe he's, is he Shaq Thompson,
right,
who got drafted 24th or 25th last year by Carolina, mm-hmm, and had a very nice rookie year, who was talked about the same way Miles Jack is being talked about now. Now, some people will say Jack's a slightly better athlete, and he may well be, but, you know, Shaq Thompson was never being talked about as a top five or top 10 pick last year. And he ended up being an outside linebacker for Carolina and playing well. So you have to decide what Miles Jack is in your base defense first and foremost. Yes, can he do things in your sub-package defense? Sure he can. You know, I think he can match up to tight ends. He did match up to slot receivers in college football. Can he do that in the NFL? Are you going to be comfortable matching up Miles Jack to Julian Edelman, to Emmanuel Sanders? This is what... It's easy to say he's athletic, but if you're a team, you have to decide, can he do that in the NFL? I hear people say he's going to line up on the outside and play corner. Well, he's not going to line up on Julio Jones. That's not going to happen. So it's nice that he's athletic, and it's nice that he can do a lot of things, but you still have to play him somewhere.
And on that note, we got Greg all fired up.
Yep.
It's a good time to transition to our pick six players that Fran and I are most intrigued to see where they land in the NFL draft.
Now it's time for pick six.
All right, time for our pick six here. I guess I'll start things off,
sure,
here, Fran, in our pick six. And I'm going to go with the quarterback position. Again, this is six players who are most intrigued to see where they land in the NFL draft, and not so much where they're drafted, but which team will end up selecting them. And I'm going to go quarterback Christian Hackenberg out of Penn State, because Fran has mentioned on the podcast how much he loves the traits that he's shown on film. There are a lot of things to like about him, but there are some things where he took a step back in the last couple of years, transitioning from Bill O'Brien to James Franklin. Now, the exact reasons why Hackenberg didn't make the progress that he was projected to have made, we don't know all the stories or all the reasons for that, but it'll be very interesting to see which type of offense will end up taking him. And then will he be able to fulfill that talent? Because after his freshman year, everyone said, this kid's going to be a bona fide top five pick. No question about it. Can he get back to that form if he lands on the right team? I think there's a good chance. It's just going to be a matter of which team selects him.
Yeah, I don't know how you feel about it, Greg. I'm really interested to see where he ends up and who gets to coach him.
He's going to be all over the board, C-Mac. There'll be teams that will have him as a top 50 player, and I bet there'll be teams that have him as a sixth or seventh round pick. And the arm talent's undeniable. I think he needs to speed up everything he does. He's a very deliberate player. His feet are a little bit heavy and static in the pocket.
Yep.
There have been times he's not shown very good pocket presence at all. He seems to get very heavy-footed. He's scattershot. See, the one thing that is really difficult for people is that he's scattershot as a passer. That normally does not improve in the NFL. Now, if you can help him with his feet, maybe it can, but he's going to be all over people's boards.
So my first player is a guy that we just talked about in the last segment, and that's Jalen Smith. I'm just really fascinated to see, because I agree, Greg, that he's a top five player in the draft when healthy, without question. And seeing his physical ability and watching him year after year on tape, and he's an outstanding prospect. So The big thing for him will be the medical recheck, which is in the next 10 days or so, going back out to Indianapolis and getting that knee looked at. How much nerve damage is there? Is there nerve damage at all? How much will it mean for not just 2016, but 2017? Can he be a first-round pick still, potentially? Or is he going to fall to day three? You know, right. It'll be very, very interesting. I'm really anxious to see where he ends up in this draft.
See, now it's funny. We talked about Miles Jack in the podcast. If you decide Miles Jack is a linebacker, then I think, to me, Jalen Smith is a better linebacker prospect than Miles Jack. Now, again, we don't want to keep qualifying with the medicals. We're just talking football.
Sure.
And
yeah.
But Jalen Smith is a better linebacker prospect than Miles Jack. And it's just a shame because this kid on tape is absolutely special.
The question is, will Smith become Willis McGahee, who suffered a severe knee injury
and ended up with a nice career?
Nice career, or is it Marcus Lattimore, who had the gruesome knee injury and has never panned out in the NFL? My second guy, I'm going to go defensive line. I'm going to go Bobby Kimdichie from Ole Miss, a player who physically has the size that you're looking for, the athleticism, has the talent, didn't put it quite all together at Ole Miss, some character concerns off the field. The question for me is, this is a guy who, again, was projected at one point to be top five selection in the draft. If he gets into the right system with the right team, can a team get through to him and bring out that talent? I'll be interested to see where he goes, because it seems like as we get closer to the draft, he's not being talked about anymore as a top 10 pick, a top 15 pick. It's sliding further and further down round one. Still see him as a first-round pick from the projections I've seen, but still not what he was projected to be just a couple weeks ago.
Well, now you get into, and Fran, you can address this as well, scheme adaptability.
Yeah.
What's his position in the NFL? Is he a 3-4 D end? Can he be a 4-3-3 technique? See, if you're a 4-3-3 technique, your value is higher than a 3-4 D end, because a 3 technique in a 3-4 is a pass rush position. It's like Aaron Donald, who I think was drafted 14th, but yet we've seen what he's done the last 2 years. That's a pass rush position. 3-4 D end is not really viewed as a pass rush position. So can Kimdichie end up, can he move in, even if you see him as a 3-4 D end in your base, can he move inside if you go to a sub package and be an inside pass rusher? I think that's the question teams have to answer.
Yeah, and I agree. And it's interesting because this is actually a perfect segue into the next guy that I want to talk about, and that's Jonathan Bullard. Because Bullard is a player that I think, look, when I watch him, I love him. I think he's a really good player, really strong run defender, just a really smart player. But I've been struggling with where I feel like his best position is. And actually, last week, I went on to Twitter.com, and I don't know if you've ever heard of it. And I did
Twitter.com,
and I did a poll. And I wanted to say, how do you think Jonathan Bullard best projects the NFL? And 115 people voted.
Okay.
43% said 4-3-3 technique.
Okay.
24% versatile backup. 20% starting 4-3 D end as a 4-3 D end.
Wow.
And then 3-4 D end as a two-gap D end was only 13%. I kind of see him as potentially being any of those positions. I think I agree, though. The 3 technique might be my favorite spot for him. But that's why I'm anxious to see where he ends up and how he's used, because I love the way he plays.
Gets back to the same question. Teams will have to decide what he is,
because
it gets to that scheme adaptability point. It's nice to watch the tape and say he's a good player, and I like him a lot as well. He's a player that grew on me. The more you watch him, the more you like him. You know, I probably ended up watching 5 or 6 games, and when I was done, I thought, wow, I really like this player. But now you think, okay, again, you're a base defense.
Yep.
If you draft him high enough where you're drafting him to be a starter, where is he starting on your defensive line? Is he a D-end? He's 285 pounds. Now, that's okay at D-end if you can have some pass rush skill. And I think he does. I think Fran would agree. We wouldn't call him explosive.
No.
He's not an explosive edge rusher. But I think he can be a pass rusher to some degree. The big question is, 285 pounds, can he be a 3 technique? If you really feel good about him as a 3 technique, then that really enhances his draft value. But he's a guy, and I know that's the purpose of this conversation, I'll be fascinated to see who drafts him and where he goes, because that will tell us how he's seen by that team.
Yeah.
All right, lastly, I'm going to go with the defensive back, Clemson safety Jayron Kearse. And the reason I'm selecting him is he has that freakish size.
He does.
That you don't see at safety. 6'4". Is a team going to view him as an outside linebacker potentially at the next level?
He's not built that way.
He's not built that way, but I'm just trying to think of a defensive coordinator takes him. And it's, again, what does he project to be at the next level? Does a defensive coordinator say, do I use him in a hybrid role, even though he maybe not have the outside linebacker build, but with that height and wingspan, do you say, do you come up with a creative way to put him in your defense? Or do you just look at him as the traditional base safety and then work him in that way?
Craig, how does he compare to George Aloka coming out?
That's an interesting comparison because of the size. Now, the thing I remember about Aloka at Boise, and you might remember this as well, Fran, is there were games he played outside corner, and he actually did okay. Now, we didn't see Kearse do that.
Right.
Maybe he could do that in college. I don't know. Aloka obviously plays a lot of deep safety, and that's a very interesting comparison. I mean, obviously, Aloka's an NFL starting player.
Just got a new deal.
Yeah. Just got a new deal and has done well in the context of that defense. Playing with a very versatile safety these last years in Reggie Nelson, which helps.
Yep.
See, again, now you're getting into team and how a guy fits. I think Kearse moves well. You know, he has a waist that I wish I had. I had that when I was about 10 years old, but not quite now. But, no, he's a good mover. You know, can he play single high safety? You know, you would look at him and think not, but you probably also would look at George Aloka initially and think he couldn't really do that well either.
Right.
And he's been able to do it. So, again, that's why very often it's hard to make sort of these blanket black and white evaluations, because it comes down to team and how a guy's used. But Kearse is he's a fascinating prospect because of his height and his length. He's got a lot of length to him.
We've talked a lot about defensive prospects in this segment, and so I'll bring it back to offense. We started with Hackenberg. I'm going to go back to tight end, and it's Thomas Duarte from UCLA. A really fascinating player. Was a college receiver. He played as they call it the Y receiver in that offense for UCLA, almost all in the slot, and you didn't see him line up in line at all. Really good ball skills, a good athlete for the tight end spot, showed the ability to separate, good route run. I mean, he does a lot of things really, really well. I wish I'd been paying more attention to him throughout the season. What are your thoughts on Duarte? How does he fit? Because can he be Jordan Reed for an offense? Can he be a guy that plays in the backfield a little bit too? He's a really intriguing prospect.
Jordan Reed was the player I thought of watching Duarte. Yeah. I think that he's, at this point, he's a receiving tight end. He's a move guy. I think that's how he transitions to the league right now. Obviously, Jordan Reed at times lines up in a traditional line of scrimmage tight end position. Duarte, are you going to put him there in your base offense? You know, again, now it comes down to team again. I don't think a team's going to draft him as a starting tight end if they feature a lot of run and they expect that tight end to be an inline blocker.
Right.
That team would see Duarte as a second tight end and a kind of a puzzle piece. But again, you think about the NFL and you think of the Sean Paytons of the world and coaches like that who are very creative formationally and how they use players who have receiving talent. I mean, why couldn't Duarte be Marcus Colston in New Orleans? You know, he's that kind of guy. You can move him around. He's a fascinating prospect to me. Another guy, as we said before, about another player, a guy that I think it was Bullard, who drafts him will say a lot about how that team sees him.
Sure. No question.
All right. That's going to do it for our pick six. Now it's time for the unofficial visit. Let's bring in our good friend Alex Smith, who is not with us here today, but he does handle the unofficial visit with cornerback Tavon Young.
The unofficial visit.
All right, I'm here with Temple defensive back Tavon Young, who just wrapped up his pro day workout here. Tavon, once the season ended, this whole draft experience, has it lived up to your expectations? What did you expect coming into it, and what's it been like for you?
I thought that this process would be more nerve-wracking, like just thinking about a lot. But it's been fun to me. I enjoyed meeting new people, getting bigger, stronger. I had fun training. It just been fun at the Combine, Senior Bowl, just met great people, just had a great time.
And once the season ends, what changes for you from a workout standpoint?
It's just workout 24/7, basically. Like, when you go train, there's no schoolwork involved, so, you know, you can more focus on lifting, like, twice a day. Lift twice a day, did two speed workouts every day. It's just been fun.
So we also saw you down at the Senior Bowl. You were at the Combine. What kind of feedback have you gotten from some of the coaches and scouts that you've met with?
That I'm impressive. They like my feet work. They like my competitiveness. I'm just fearless, and they just love it.
And if there's maybe one part of your game that you're trying to work on over these last few weeks heading into the draft?
I'm just getting stronger and just always working on my technique. You know you can never be perfect.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
Time to round things out with the draft mailbag. You know, all you do is put on Twitter, Greg Cosell is going to be in studio for your show, and you get questions. It's very simple.
You don't even need to ask. They just come.
They just knew.
Some of them are even about football.
Exactly. Instead of Greg's charming looks. Let's transition here. Our first question comes from our good friend Wilton Houston on Twitter. What have you seen from Jacoby Brissett from NC State that transitions well to the NFL level?
Well, I could make the argument that after Wentz, Jacoby Brissett's the next most physically gifted quarterback in this draft.
More so than Cardale Jones.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, Brissett's intriguing, man.
Yeah.
He flashes of really high-level quarterback play. And this is going back the last couple of years. I mean, he's... shows really good flashes.
Yeah, really. I mean, the kind of plays that you look at both in the pocket and outside the pocket and think this guy has a real chance to be a quality starter at some point. Now, he played behind a poor O-line. I think he's developed some bad habits in the pocket of perhaps perceiving pressure at times, which you can't do as an NFL quarterback. I think the big question with Jacoby Brissett is going to be the quickness with which he processes and isolates. Because I think he's one of those quarterbacks that when he drops back and the throw is immediately there, he can look beautiful and the ball comes out. I think that when there are times when that throw is not there and he has to start eliminating, that's one thing that's never talked about with quarterbacks is how quickly you eliminate what's not there. Because too many quarterbacks sit on what's not there too long, mm-hmm. and then they can't get to what is there, then it's too late. And that's only worse in the NFL. So I think that would be a question about Jacoby Brissett. But Jacoby Brissett has a ton of talent. And, he's a guy I'll be real anxious to see where he's drafted. Now, just a very quick comment. You mentioned Cardale Jones. To me, I don't think Cardale Jones is as good a prospect as Logan Thomas was coming out of Virginia Tech. And Logan Thomas is not in the league, or he might be in the league right now.
I don't think he is.
Yeah.
And he's not in the league right now.
We both like Logan Thomas.
And I don't think Cardale Jones is as good a prospect as Logan Thomas was.
What I guess that gets back to what you mean by physical talent. Is it combining, I think of more Cardale from as an athletic standpoint.
Right. Like
that's probably when I think of physically gifted, I'm thinking of that.
Well, here's what Cardale Jones has.
He has the arm talent. And I guess that's similar
to Logan
Thomas. Cardale
Jones can throw the ball hard, and he can run. So now, again, we've had this conversation for a couple of years about Colin Kaepernick. Being able to throw the ball hard and run fast in a straight line, those are not quarterback traits in the NFL. The thing that really stood out to me watching Cardale Jones, and this is arguably teachable, but he has no idea how to play quarterback right now. When you watch him play, he doesn't know where to throw the ball. He doesn't throw it with any sense of timing or rhythm. He's not particularly accurate. So you're dealing with a guy that has a power arm and is a big guy that can run. So a lot of people see him and think Cam Newton. That's the natural comparison. Can Cardale Jones become that player? He has a really, really long way to go.
Well, Cam Newton is much more developed coming out of Auburn than what Cardale Jones is now. So
Cardale Jones has only started, what, France? 7 games? 8 games?
Something like that. I think maybe 11 total now.
Very little experience as a quarterback.
We'll stick with the quarterback position here. Mitch Wilms, at Wilms_M on Twitter. Why has Paxton Lynch kind of become the forgotten man when discussing the quarterbacks? Because initially it was Goff, Wentz, and Lynch. It was kind of they were all discussed, the three of them together. Well, as time has gone on through the draft process, it's become Goff and Wentz, and Lynch is like, yeah, he'll probably still be selected in the first round, but he's not in that conversation anymore.
You know, I think the more people watch Paxton Lynch on film, the physical traits are obvious. He can really throw the ball. He can throw with velocity. He can throw with some touch. I think there's a couple of things that stand out when you watch him. Number one, there's a very wide variation in his play. And I think that's always a bit of a red flag for a quarterback. We know, look, not every game is a great game, but I think when you watch Paxton Lynch, and what's really problematic was as the season progressed, it seemed as if he got worse. Okay, so you're seeing such a wide variance in his play, that's a concern. And I mentioned this to Fran. I remember watching the Houston game, which was later in the season.
Okay.
And obviously the coaching staff knows a lot more about Paxton Lynch than we do. They're with him every single day. So I'm watching the Houston game, and he gets off to a bad start. Okay, it was a game they actually got ahead, but he got off to a bad start. And they took the ball out of his hands. The coaching staff took the ball out of his hands. And I'm sitting there watching that tape, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, here's your star quarterback, big-time prospect, and you're taking the ball out of his hands. And I'm thinking, why? And I don't know the answer,
but
it just made me think, okay, they know him better than I do. Maybe they know that he doesn't bounce back from adversity real well in a game. I don't know the answer to that. But that just struck me as a game that I can't get that game out of my head because they know him better than I do.
Well, Fran has noticed, and he's said on the podcast before, that he's noticed the play calling has drastically changed
over
the course of the year.
Yeah.
Then at the combine, Paxton said that a couple of things came up on my...
Teams were spooked by the combine.
Teams were spooked.
By the medical workout.
The medical check. So did that play a factor into it? I don't know, but it seems
he's a gifted thrower. There's no question about that. He's a very gifted thrower. And again, with that offense, and Fran knows this as well, there's a lot of big plays that are bubble screens where guys run for 60 yards. I mean, you see a lot of those kinds of plays in that offense.
Okay, a couple more questions here. We'll go back to another quarterback one. We'll go with this one here. Brian, it goes by at @ArryOrn on Twitter. I probably botched it, but did the best way I could here. Are Wentz and Goff being pushed up the board due to a lack of a true franchise quarterback option? Obviously, that's perception there. Or are they legit? And we kind of already touched
Wentz
on this.
Wentz is legit
here, but
as a prospect, for sure. You know, Goff's intriguing. I mean, I think a lot of people, including myself, have made a comparison to someone like Matt Ryan, just in terms of physical traits.
And
Matt Ryan was the number three pick in a draft and has had a very good NFL career. Mm-hmm. No one would say Matt Ryan as just a pure thrower is top three in the league. You know, he's not that kind of thrower, but he can make all the throws. Yeah. I think Goff is more like that guy. But there's no question in my mind, Wentz has only pushed up the board in people's minds because of where he played.
Yeah.
Not the traits. Wentz has better traits than Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. Now, whether that means he'll be a better quarterback, only time will answer that. But he's got high-level traits.
All right. Last question here comes from Ben Evan at @BSousa at Twitter. Can you guys explain the Sam Mike linebacker position? Seems pretty important for Eagles fans to get their heads around.
Fran?
So, you know, obviously with the Eagles transitioning from a 3-4 to a 4-3, fans have to get back to being accustomed to these different linebacker positions. And really, you know, when you're talking about a 4-3 Sam linebacker, and that's really the biggest difference now from what we've seen in the past from the 3-4, is a guy, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like a lot of 4-3 teams kind of use that position a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But typically to the strong side of the formation as a strong side linebacker, closer to the tight end, whether it's
often on the ball
on
as
the
opposed
ball,
to off
correct.
The ball, meaning
yep.
on the line of scrimmage.
Yep, so on the line of scrimmage, think back to, you know, Carlos Emmons from the early 2000s.
One of the best.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, and a guy that can cover the tight end, help as a run defender, sometimes be used as a pass rusher at times, but, you know, what you really want is a guy that can work over the tight end and has no issues at the point of attack.
Really, a Sam linebacker, which is another term for strong side linebacker, has to have both, as we say, on-the-ball ability, meaning play on the line of scrimmage, and off-the-ball ability, because very often in 4-3s, you'll have an alignment that we call a 4-3 stack, where all three linebackers are lined up behind the defensive line. So a Sam linebacker in a 4-3 really needs to be able to play on the ball and battle whether it's a tight end or a tackle, depending on a blocking scheme, or play off the ball and have enough movement skill that he can play in space. It's a tough position in a 4-3.
Yeah, and the biggest difference now for the Eagles is transitioning from a 2-gap to a 1-gap is, you know, those linebackers before, they had to read and react, see what the defensive line was doing in terms of how they were playing their gaps, and they were filling in opposite. So, you know, if the Mike linebacker's playing behind Benny Logan and Benny's got both A-gaps and he goes to the left A-gap, the linebacker's got to fill the right A-gap. And now in a 1-gap scheme, pre-snap, those linebackers know, hey, I'm responsible for
this gap. You have a gap.
You have a gap. You are responsible for 1 gap in the defensive front, and you got to fit that in the run fit. And in a lot of ways, it makes it easier for the linebackers.
Well, Greg, let me get your thoughts on Nigel Bradham, who the Eagles signed.
Well, Nigel Bradham had his best season under Jim Schwartz. And to me, Nigel Bradham is more of a run-and-chase kind of linebacker.
Okay.
I mean, he's solidly built guy, but I wouldn't necessarily call him a power linebacker. I think he's effective as a mover more than a power guy. And again, he's here because he had his best year under Jim Schwartz, so he knows the defense, knows what his role in the defense will be, and the learning curve will be very small because he understands what that role is. And my guess is, barring anything, he's going to start a linebacker for this team.
Well, gentlemen, I know that you have a long day of film shoots ahead of you.
That's right.
With the film room. A new twist on it this year, I'm looking forward to it, that instead of just breaking down the prospects on tape, you're going to discuss the traits and what makes each of the prospects have a good chance for success transitioning to the NFL. So, again, when will that debut?
That'll be this Wednesday. So the same day that this podcast is rolling out on the site, you'll see first film room will come up.
Excellent. Very much looking forward to it. Greg Cosell, NFL Film Senior Producer, thank you very much for joining us here in studio. For Fran Duffy and Alex Smith, wherever he is today, he's actually on jury duty. That's why he's not with us in studio. I'm Chris McPherson. You've been listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.